Cynthia Wilson, and this message is for you. This podcast covers micro motivators to encourage you to act because small actions can make a big difference in your life. Welcome to episode 24. Today's message is find a way to remove what is blocking you from your goal. I am so excited that I have a very special guest today with me, Stacy Gibbons. Stacy is ERY 500 and certified in many forms of yoga, with her latest passion being in somatic yoga. She's a faculty member at the Omega Institute. She's a faculty member at the Jaguar Path, Modern Shamanism and the Science of Healing. And she is co-founder of Shamanic Reiki Worldwide. Welcome, Stacy.
Thank you so much for having me.
So we met in Shamanic Reiki classes at Omega Institute last year. And now you've moved on from Shamanic Reiki and are teaching Jaguar Path. So can you share a bit about what the Jaguar Path is and how it can help others?
You know, the Jaguar Path, I went through the 9-month Jaguar Path training probably, I'm going to guess 15 years ago. Ray and Nina Crist are the founders of the Jaguar Path. I trained with Ray. We cannot remember when I went through the Jaguar Path. I think it was 2010 or 2011, and it was life-changing for me. I met Ray at Kripalu, and he was teaching a weekend that brought yoga and shamanism together. And I was fascinated with that because I was also doing that at the same time at my studio, Earth and Sky Yoga in Wolfboro, New Hampshire. And so I met him and I was just instantly drawn to him. He's one of the most giving and open and compassionate people I've ever met. So I went through the 9-month training and it was life-changing for me on many levels. Because it brought all the different languages that I understood into a cohesive form that I could teach. So it was yoga and shamanism and Reiki and all of that. And then I made the decision to close my studio and I stepped into shamanic Reiki full time. And that's when Lynn and I created the online programs. And if you've never read anything by Lynn Roberts, do it. She's written Shamanic Reiki, Shapeshifting into Higher Consciousness, The Good Remembering, as well as Speaking with Nature with Sandra Ingerman. So we started the online programs together and we did that for many years. And then it was time for me to move on. I'm going to be 58 in October. And you know what? My mom passed away when she was 58. So that's been a big number for me for a long time. And in the last couple of years, I just felt this really deep invitation to explore some of the other things that I've been interested in for a long time. And it was a really hard decision for me to make because I absolutely love shamanic Reiki. It's been a transition, but I'm having a lot of fun and I'm creating some really cool things. So it's all good. People who go through the Jaguar Path usually go through it 2 times because they love it so much. And there's a really great community connected to it. But everybody goes through it differently. It's like, we know that from even in your shamanic Reiki training, right? It's like, it's a unique experience for everybody. It's mainly built on Peruvian shamanism and yoga and Qigong and Chinese meridian theory and all of these things that make us who we are and all of these, you know, different paths to get there. So when you go through the 9-month training, you're really being asked to step into those very tender places within yourself to remember that you have everything that it takes to heal. And that can be scary sometimes, you know, because we haven't been taught that. The energy around Jaguar is no fear. So the only enemy that a Jaguar has is man. Other than that, it has no fear. The Jaguar represents that real deep feminine power within us, you know, that's connected to the earth. So we're really being asked to come home to that truth that's deep within ourselves. Like, we can do this. Even though having no fear is challenging, sometimes you have to fake it until you actually believe it, right? So in the 9 months, we move through many, many different practices from Peru, from the high Andes. And Ray Crist has a very, very unique and powerful story. He was diagnosed with cancer, terminal cancer, many years ago. And when he found out, of course, like, what do we do when we find something out like that? You know, he wanted to run. He wanted to find somebody who could, you know, cure him. He wanted to hide, all of those things. And he ended up in Peru and worked with the shamans there for many months until one of the shamans told him, your cancer is gone except for one spot. You have to find a shaman in the United States. And Ray said, what? There are no shamans in the United States. And was told, listen, anybody who can open you up, take something out, sew you back up, and you're still alive, that's a shaman. And it's true. And I think that sometimes when we, you know, when we follow this path of shamanism and, you know, natural healing remedies, we think that we have to choose. We think that we have to be against modern medicine. Modern medicine is amazing. But he had one spot left and they took care of that. And he's been cancer free for, I don't know, I'm guessing at this 18 years. But he was compelled really to create the Jaguar Path. So he came back to the States and that's exactly what he did. And he taught at Kripalu for many years, also taught the 9 month training at this little place called Shakespeare and Company in Lenox, Mass. And that's where he held the 9 month trainings. And I met him and within a few months I was in that 9 month training because I heard his story. And I thought, this is a really a living example, you know, of how to shapeshift something that you think is terminal into something that is a beautiful path that's going to help others. So I got in touch with him, I think last summer, and he said, yes, please come, come and teach the Jaguar Path. So that's what I'm doing now at Omega. And I just couldn't be more thrilled. I think it's an amazing opportunity through yoga, through Qigong and Tai Chi and other practices, Reiki, to really find the power within yourself. And again, it's unique to everyone who walks on that into that journey. It's so transformative and the community is so tight knit that it's just, it's a real blessing, especially in the world today.
Sure. So I know that you have a workshop coming up at Omega pretty soon. So do you want to share the dates for that?
Yes. And this is coming up October 12th through 17th, and it's the Jaguar Path, an immersive experience. And it's 5 days of ceremony, shamanic practices, as well as somatic yoga and some other surprises. A little bit of yoga nidra, which I call shamanic sleep, and which is a deep weaving of yoga nidra and shamanic journeying practices. So it's really open to anybody. If you're a yoga teacher and you want to learn how to merge some of the shamanic practices or language into your yoga class, this is a perfect 5-day experience. If you are a healing practitioner and would like to learn some more tools, some new tools for your medicine bundle, it's a perfect opportunity for a healing practitioner, whether it's Reiki or other healing modalities. But it's also for anybody who's on a healing journey. You don't have to come into it knowing what you're doing. You can walk in and say, I've never done this before, and I just want to experience the power and the magic of this and how transformative it can be. So really, it's open to all. It's going to give you exactly what you need.
Awesome. Thanks for sharing more about that.
Thanks.
So as we look at this work and kind of all of your combined work, what are the most common energetic or emotional blocks that you observe?
You know, I think that this lifetime is very much about healing the ancestral realms, our connection to our ancestors. And what I've been seeing for years, and I was a practitioner of the healing arts for many years when I had my own studio, what I was seeing were imbalances in the connection to, you know, our mother and our father, and the dysfunction that has been passed down through generations. And I think that this specific lifetime, and this is an amazing lifetime, I know that it doesn't seem like it is. If you listen to the news, you know, and you're scrolling on your phone, you are absolutely going to think that this is a horrible time to be alive. But it isn't. We're here for a very specific reason, and that's to confront our fears, to really feel into the dysfunction that anchored into every level of our being as a child, and to step into that healing journey so that we can not only heal ourselves, but that whole ancestral line. And when we do that, you better believe our ancestors are on the other side cheering us on, because they know what a big job we had coming in to this lifetime. They know. So that's what I've been seeing. Believe it or not, it's not that hard to connect to those realms and to do the work. I think that we think that we have to overprocess everything to the point where I need to understand this on every level from every angle. And it's just not true, because the work that we do, the shamanic work that we do, the reason why it works is because we move into the corridor of feeling. Feeling is what heals. You know, it's not over talking. And when I say that, I put myself into therapy for many years. So I love cognitive-based therapy, and I think it's very, very helpful. But the work that we do in the Jaguar Path and in Shamanic Reiki is really moving into those original wounds. As an observer, we don't have to re-traumatize ourselves. We move in as an observer and we shape-shift those places through the elements, through feeling. So it's a very exciting time to be here.
Yeah, there's so much around the ancestral traumas, if you will, or anything that's been coming through for a lot of people recently. And then like, some of it is in like, I don't recognize why this is a part of my life, you know, and looking at that and then realizing that, oh, that was actually from something in the past. Mm-hmm. I've done some of that work with emotion code and body code, where there are ancestral lines with that as well, that when you remove something from you, and you can find out if it's inherited, and then you remove it from all the generations and all the lines, which is a fantastic way to move forward with something that winds up being so simple, and you don't have to relive all of the traumas of the past just to be able to move forward.
Yeah. And I know that sometimes, and I'm saying this actually because I can remember a time when I thought this. When I just stepped into my own healing journey, I was 29 years old, and I was a hot mess. I had a significant panic disorder. I had acid reflux that was so intense that I couldn't sleep lying down. I had to prop myself up in a seated position with pillows all around me. And I had two little boys, and nobody knew that I was suffering because I pretended everything that was okay until I couldn't pretend anymore. And I can remember when I first signed up for a Reiki course. It was level one. I had no idea what it even was, other than the fact that there was a woman in town that taught Reiki. And she looked like she stepped out of a dark forest. She had long black hair, a long black dress, and she floated across the parking lot. And her van had a license plate that said Reiki on it. And I was like, wow, she is like, there was just power all around her. Mm-hmm. And I knew I had to do something. And I knew what I was doing wasn't working. The medication that they gave me caused severe stomach cramping. I couldn't take it. I still was having the panic attacks. So I went to the local health food store and saw that there was an upcoming Reiki training. One was with Lynn Roberts and one was with this other woman who was teaching at the time. And I was like, well, I don't know what this is, but I'm going to try it because I'm desperate. And I think people find their way into Reiki and or shamanism because they're either intrigued, like, I don't know why, but I feel like I understand this, but I don't have the words to describe why I think I understand it. They could be desperate, which is, you know, that was my story. But they might also hear it from somebody else. Somebody else might have an experience and they're like, ooh, I want to try that. But mine was absolutely desperation. And I find that a lot of people that find their way into these trainings have to go through some sort of dark night of the soul. Like, I'm desperate. I have nowhere else to go. I'm going to do this. And I don't even know if it's going to work. But I did try to sign up with, you know, this woman that I knew from town, and she never called me back. Mm-hmm. So I had to go back and take the information of the other person that was teaching Reiki, and that was Lynn. And how lucky was I to find her at that time in my life. And I stepped in and I had no idea what I was doing. I was with eight other women and they all had an amazing experience that weekend and I didn't. I didn't feel anything. My hands didn't heat up. I didn't meet an ancestor or receive some, you know, esoteric symbol. Nothing mm-hmm. happened. So I went home that first night and I said to my husband at the time, I think that everybody had an experience, but I didn't because Lynn must have forgotten a really important symbol when she passed the attunement to me. So I got so stuck in my head. And I went to bed, and sometime during the night, all the pillows ended up on the floor. And I slept through the night lying flat on the bed, and I woke up and I did not have acid reflux. It's never come back. It was gone. And I was so blown away by that I couldn't even talk about it because I had a moment where I understood beyond words that this world is not what we think it is. And it's been my sort of life's mission to step into as many different facets of healing as possible because I'm a natural skeptic, even when these things happen. I'm a natural skeptic, but guess what? If you're a natural skeptic, that's a superpower because you're always going to be searching. You're always going to be seeking more and more to find out more. So it's not a bad thing. But that's really how it all happened for me. And for those of you out there who think, well, I'm not a healer, I can't do this, this is too woo-woo for me. It's not, because this work is already encoded into every cell of our body. And when we step into this work, we're not being taught this work. We're actually remembering that we already know it. It's that deep. And it connects us to the earth, and it connects us to the stars. And it, over time, makes more and more sense. You start to really embody the teachings. So it's an amazing path for anybody, whether you're on a healing journey as a practitioner or you're just in, you're desperate like I was.
So I'll share with you a little bit about my journey. I was studying communications in my undergrad, and I was doing my thesis on the image of witches in film. And as I was learning about that, I got into some crossover between, you know, some of the nature-based stuff that witches practice, as well as shamanism. And so I started to look into that more and, you know, find a local sweat lodge and and move through there. And then I, you know, I really wanted to dive in deeper, and I found a shaman was coming, and I got a session with this shaman, but I didn't have anything to heal. I didn't have like an ailment. And so I just garnered a blessing from this shaman, but he wasn't someone who wanted to teach. So I was slightly dissuaded for a while in shamanism, and wound up coming back to it years later after reading a book that had in the bibliography information about shamanism. And I started to take classes at the Foundation for Shamanic Studies. And my first experience of coming to Omega was for the emotion code. There, I decided that I wanted to get a session at the Wellness Center. And I decided to get shamanic Reiki because I wanted to see what it was about. So I got the shamanic Reiki session, which was amazing. And then next up was your class. So I feel like it's always one thing that leads to another, you know, for me, and just keeps moving on.
That's amazing. So that shamanic blessing came back around years later.
Yeah.
I love it.
So how can someone integrate shamanic insights into daily life? And what's the simplest daily ritual that you could recommend?
I'm a big believer of meditation and breath work, because it's simple, and we make it a lot harder than it is. But when you think about it, if you're not connected to your breath, you're not here anymore, right? If you don't have the breath, if you can't take a breath, you're not here. So the breath is the bridge between the earth and the cosmos. And when we have events that happen in our life, they don't have to be huge traumatic events. You know, they're just like just being human can be a little traumatic, right? Because, you know, we feel and we can get hurt and all of those things. But when we go through an event in our life that brings about an emotion that is intense, whether it's anger or grief, confusion, your body takes a snapshot of that. It does. The experience doesn't just flit off into the universe. There's something that happens with our muscles and our connective tissue and the way that we hold our body. And in that moment where we hold our breath, or those moments where we're sobbing, uncontrollably. Our whole body downloads that experience. And once your body downloads an experience, anytime you even get close to that emotion again, it's going to reinforce whatever pattern that created in the body. So if the breath is the first thing that activates that snapshot in time, then you unravel that through the breath as well. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you what I used to do. You know, I wish I could say that my panic disorder was completely gone after my Reiki level one weekend, but it wasn't. That took longer. Mm-hmm. But I was also, I had just started taking yoga practices, and I will tell you that I hated yoga with a passion. But my friends, once they realized what was going on with me, they dragged me there, and it took me about a month, and I started to feel better. Every time I got on the mat, everything hurt. It hurt to even take a deep breath because I had been holding my breath, or my breath was shallow for so long because I was in constant fight or flight. Mm-hmm. But what I started doing is taking, you know, 5 to 10 minutes and doing a 2.5 breaths per minute sort of practice. So 12 count, inhale, pause, 12 count, exhale, pause. I slowed my breath down and I concentrated on getting my breath all the way down into the low belly, all the way down into the bottom parts of the lungs that were just so closed down. And that worked for me, but you can do other practices like an inhale for 6, hold for 6, exhale for 6. You can make it up even if you're just spending 5 to 10 minutes noticing that you're actually breathing and working on getting the breath down into the low belly and low back. That's enough. That's going to activate the nervous system. Something's different. We're creating a new pattern here. So breath work and meditation, there's so many different forms of meditation out there. I practice transcendental meditation. That works for me, but I've done many, many different kinds. And the cool thing is you can't fail at any of them. So why not do it? You can't fail.
Right. Despite the fact that we know you can't fail, there are so many people that say, I just can't meditate. I just can't sit still. I can't do that. Even in just looking at your Apple Watch, like get it down to a minute. Can you sit for 1 minute? Yeah. It doesn't need to be hours. It doesn't need to be days at a retreat or something, right? It can be that simple as just, okay, can I look at my watch, do the breath, and just go in and out for that 1 minute?
When people say they can't meditate, what I hear is, I don't want to feel. Mm. Because the moment you step into that place of stillness, whatever you're pushing down is going to bubble to the surface. And in our culture, especially right now, we are training our brains to pay attention for just a few seconds. And then we're off to the next meme or the next reel or whatever. We're constantly going. Our brain doesn't know how to be still at this point because we're training it not to be still. So I think that if you can go into a meditation knowing that you're going to feel antsy and you're going to think of a million things because you're human and you can't fail at meditation, you know, start, give yourself something easy. Like you said, just do a minute. You don't try to set yourself up for 20 minutes every morning and every evening when you know that that's going to be too much. Start small.
And then you'll be able to increase, right? Oh, I can do a minute. That's easy now, yeah. Right? How about two? How about five?
But it'll take a while. And it's like, what if we were not attached to how we progressed? But just appreciating the stillness, whatever you're doing, appreciate that you can do it. You know, in transcendental meditation, what I love about it is that you go through a ceremony. You have five sessions, and you basically go through a ceremony where they give you your own personal mantra. And you don't tell anybody that mantra, it's just yours. It's like a key that opens a portal. And it may not feel that way in the beginning, but when you sit and you practice that mantra, you just say it over and over again, what you'll find is that thoughts will come in. And then you go back to the mantra. It's almost like your brain is taking out the trash. Because we have all of these thoughts, you know. Some of these thoughts are worries that are projected into the future. Some of them are fears about, you know, things that have happened in the past, you know, feeling those things. And some of those thoughts are just thoughts that we need to have. But they're all, you know, bunched up in this brain of ours. And when we move into meditation and we receive a mantra, our brain gets to a certain point and then it just dumps. It just dumps that extra stuff. And I can't explain it. And I even though I had practiced other forms of meditation, when I got into this, I was a little, I mean, hello, I'm a skeptic. So I go into everything like, yeah, prove it. So I went into it and I had this really clear understanding after doing it for about a month or two, I think, that, oh, I understand how the brain works now. I see, I can literally feel how the brain is so inundated with all of these thoughts, and you get to a certain point in your meditation where something shifts and those thoughts release. And you feel, like I feel, as if I'm floating in this stillness, like I'm deep in space, and that the stillness has this amazing sound and I'm just there. But if you had told me that I would be experiencing that, I would have laughed and said, there's no way. So it's like you have to just find, you have to find the forms of meditation or the forms of yoga or the forms of shamanic practice that really speak your language. You have to find your right way. And you can't just transpose that on to somebody else because they're different. We're all different. Find your bliss.
So true. Absolutely. So we talked a little bit about kind of the state of the world here today and the impacts of that. How would you say that cultural or societal systems contribute to energetic blocks?
Well, we're not just, you know, individual people walking around on the planet. We also have a collective experience. So, I mean, the perfect example of that is what we all went through all over the planet collectively through COVID. You know, we all had our personal experience and we all shared a very deep experience with every person on this planet. And it changed us. You know, I don't know if I have the words yet as to how it all changed us, but we're seeing it. We're kind of seeing it playing out. It took something away from us, but it also gave us stillness. You know, a stillness that we needed. And at the same time, I think we're grieving the loss of those, what, 2 years, really? So I think we're working collectively with a deep injury to, you know, our soul, to our journey here on this planet. And again, you know, we have those collective experiences, but we also have, you know, the ancestral journey that we're on right now as well. So we have all of these deeper weavings. We have this whole tapestry of experience through the collective, through, you know, each individual human, and it's all woven together. And I think it's important to remember that we're all connected. You know, I don't, we're not taught that. We've been taught sort of, you know, we're one person on our own, and these are all the goals that we have, and we've got to do this by 22, and we've got to do this by, you know, we have this whole expectation sort of what our life is supposed to be like. This is a successful life, you know. And I don't know, I just think we're all really working hard to not only heal ourselves, but to come back together, and remember the beauty of being connected to each other.
Yes, I totally agree. That certainly is a great example of how we're all impacted by something at the same time. You know, we could look back to 9/11. You know, that was something that impacted the whole world as well. In the same sort of way, although it was different, you know, we all had to adjust to different ways of traveling and get over fears of traveling during those times as well. So yeah, there's going to be different points in times, and wherever you are in the world, there's different things that are happening that could have that same sort of impact. Even if it's not exactly global, it could be something that is around your own community that is happening. We've seen a lot of gun violence that has impacted with school shootings, and that can impact a town in a way that you'd never have thought would have rocked that world, in a way that, you know, also brings people together and in some ways, you know, tears people apart.
It's literally woven into the tapestry of our experience. It becomes something that is a memory on in the core of our being, you know, and we share that.
Absolutely. Can shamanic practice support productivity and focus?
Absolutely. I mean, think about it. When we're bogged down with the weight of pain and grief and anger, that takes a toll on us. That, you know, and eventually, you know, the way the energetic system is built, is it's going to manifest at some point physically. And, or it might manifest, you know, in the mental, emotional realm. So it's so important to just move into these spaces without fear. And again, like fake it till you make it, because we're all afraid to do our healing. Like we all are. Doesn't matter how many certificates you have on the wall. It's like we're all humans, and we're all afraid or hesitant to step into those deeper feeling realms. But when you start to access those spaces within yourself that have held pain, when you release it, you uncover these amazing jewels of wisdom that become part of who you are, part of your experience. So of course it's going to affect everything. It opens you up. You have more space in your world for love. You have more space in your world for compassion. You have more space for stillness. It's like when you have unhealed trauma in the body, it steals your time because it doesn't go away. It's there. You feel it, and you can make yourself as busy as you want. But the fact is it's still there. Here's an example of this. In shamanic Reiki, we have this amazing practice called removing intrusions. And you would think the word intrusions means that it's something outside going in, right? But it's not. You know, an intrusion can start off as a traumatic event. It could start off as a repetitive thought pattern, anxiety, anything like that. And what happens is that after a while, it's almost as if it becomes its own sentient force, because we've kept feeding it over time. Nope, I'm not going to look at that. I don't want to feel it. This is not the time to deal with it. I'm busy. And we push it away. We don't push it into the ethers. We push it somewhere into the body. And that could become a chronic condition or ailment. It could become something deeper, like a disease. It could be a weak spot in the body. It could be anything. It could be an addiction. Anything. So once we can track that, and we can track it, anybody can do it just by looking at it. It's not about overprocessing it and thinking about it from every level and remembering exactly when this happened and why and who and where. And that's what we do to ourselves. We drive ourselves crazy because we think if we can't understand it on all levels, then we haven't healed it. But in the intrusions practice, you can expand your consciousness to look at it, perhaps from the outside. What does it look like? Is it a color? Is it a shape? Is it a size? Is it emotional tone, a texture, an object? How do you experience this when you look at it or when you feel it? And from there, we can transmute it into something that's neutral. For example, here's my story about this. My mother was not the most emotionally available person. She had such a deep, deep heart, but she was afraid of her own love. She was afraid to show it. She always had to be in control. And I can remember as a little girl growing up, I knew that when she would stand at the sink, she'd stand at the sink, and there was a window over the sink that looked out onto our huge backyard. And beyond the backyard was this big cemetery. And she would stand kind of with, you know, her arms a little crossed in front of her, and she would have a cigarette in her hand. And she would very slowly, you know, inhale and then very slowly blow the smoke out towards the window. And I knew as a little girl that that meant she was not available. Now, there were other things that she did, but years and years later, and I mean maybe 30 years later, 25, 30 years later, I was practicing this intrusions practice. Now, I didn't remember this. It wasn't something that was imprinted consciously. But when I went to an area of the body where I was really suffering, and I was asked to look at that, feel it, sense it, what do you see? I saw a cigarette. Mm-hmm. And that cigarette is what represented, I am not emotionally available. Mm-hmm. And I can remember having a moment of just awe of how the body imprints these experiences. So I shifted it. I shifted into something that was neutral and soft and loving. And from there, you remove it from the energetic system. And when you do this type of work, it's complete. In the spiritual realm, all the work is complete. But sometimes people don't believe that they've taken care of something because they're still thinking about it, or they don't feel 100% better right when they do the practice. You have to remember that the physical body is the most dense level that we exist at, and it's like running to catch up with the work that we do in these expanded conscious realms. But that is a perfect example of how experiences imprint on the body energetically.
Yeah, that's great. One of the things as you were talking, you know, when you think about all the stress and where people, you know, have these blocks today, and what kind of came up for me during one of the, you know, workshops we were working in was just about fun. Mm-hmm. So many people just forget to have fun and like as a part of their day, you know, that childlike wonder that we all had that lack of fear again that we all had. You know, there's so much else that has us, our protections up all over the place, that, you know, that are some of the blocks that we have. And working through what that is or why that is, and getting to remove that, can really open up things to happiness.
Yeah, to our heart, you know, our heart really leads the way. That's one of, I think, the most profound things that I learned from Lynn with just the many years I worked with her. Is I remember the first time she said, the mind needs to take a back seat to the heart. The mind never wanted to lead. The mind is at its best when the heart leads the way. When the mind leads the way, if it's not disciplined, it's like an unruly toddler, you know? And it's true. And that's why we have meditation, because we train the mind. Through discipline, we are free. The mind loves to be disciplined. And when we discipline the mind, we allow the heart to step in. So that's another reason why, please, please meditate.
Awesome. Well, I've got one last question for you. So if you could distill all the work that you've done into a core message for someone feeling stuck, what would it be?
Okay. I just finished 2 1-month long trainings in Satya Yoga, which was created by T.S. Little of Prajna Yoga. And he said this, but I'm not sure where he got this. It could be his saying, it could be from somewhere else, but I love it. And this is it. The corridor of feeling leads you to your inner physician.
That's
Feeling,
beautiful.
thanks. Yeah, it really is. And I can remember when I heard him say it, I just had a moment where I had to sit back in awe of that statement, because it's so true. And not only does the corridor of feeling lead you to the inner physician, it leads you to the inner teacher, to the inner guru, the inner healer. That's what it is. We don't have to be afraid of feeling. Feeling is what helps the heart remember. And, you know, if you have hard stuff in your life, I commend you. You know, it's being a human isn't easy. And again, you do not have to re-traumatize yourself by going back into that very moment, but you can step into the feeling as an observer and remove that from your world. You don't have to suffer. I think we have to suffer. Or we've suffered for so long, we don't know that there's another way. And I think we've all been there. And sometimes that's what it takes to make a big shift in your life, is when you absolutely become desperate because you're like, I can't do this anymore. So the corridor of feeling leads you to the inner physician, the inner healer, the inner teacher, the inner guru.
Thank you so much for being with us here today, Stacy.
Thank you.
It has been quite enlightening, and I'm so excited about this. So thank you.
You're welcome. I'll see you soon.
Yeah. So for all of you out there, find a way to remove what is blocking you from your goal. And remember, this message is for you.